Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Hannah, I went a different direction. I usually bring red wine, if not white. I went beer today. Mm-hmm. And we'll see if you can figure it out.
Surrender Dorothy. It's from the Seven Locks Brewing Company right here in Rockville, Maryland.
Do you recognize the picture?
And the picture, it looks, is that the...
That's
tabernacle thing that's off of 495.
Yeah, it's the Mormon temple you see.
The Mormon temple.
When you come around the beltway.
Oh, very cool. Does it have anything to do with today's movies?
It does.
Okay, am I supposed to figure that one out? Because do they look like rockets shooting out of the...
Well, it sounds like you're alluding to Rocket Man.
Uh-huh.
So therefore, goodbye, Yellow Brick Road.
Oh, yes, there is a picture of a yellow road leading to the temple. Okay. I get it. Not bad.
People say the biggest film this week is going to be Godzilla, the sequel Godzilla, where it's just a lot of monster v. monster.
King of the Monsters.
Therefore, we did not see Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
You've seen one big green lizard, you've seen them all. Come on.
We did see Rocket Man, which was at Cannes. I don't know if it was competing, but I think it was just its big unveiling was at Cannes. And... it has a very positive tomato,
mm-hmm.
and unfortunately, I don't know if it's in its favor or if it's not, because people have musical biopics in their mouths. It's going to be compared very closely to Bohemian Rhapsody, Rami Malek versus Taron Egerton, Freddie Mercury versus Elton John. Since they're so close together, they're going to be cousins.
Well, and the same director, at least in part, he did a couple of scenes. I think he finished up Bohemian Rhapsody.
Rocket Man is not the entire life of Elton John. It's a large part of it. It's about 30 years of it, from about 1960, young Elton John, to about 1990, coming out of rehab, newly sober Elton John. There are things I really loved about this movie. There are things I really did not care mm-hmm. for about this movie. I liked it better than Bohemian Rhapsody. That was a movie I didn't particularly take to. This is not as literal. Is that if you ever saw Across the Universe, which was a Beatles music celebration, this is akin to that. You'll break out in musical interludes, song and dance routines. You don't know what song's coming, like Bohemian Rhapsody, because a late Elton John song could play early, as it does. An early Elton John song could play at the climax, which it does. It's all over the place. It does go a bit mostly chronological. Mm-hmm. Young, middle, and getting up there.
Yes.
Overall, I'm positive. I'm a thumbs up on Rocket Man. Elton John's not my favorite, but he's so outrageous. And Taron Egerton's performance is so virtuoso. I'm leaning towards recommend Rocket Man.
Yeah, I'm sort of in the same camp. I wanted so much to love this movie because I remember when I first saw the trailer, I love Taron Egerton. I saw how talented he was. And when I found out that he was, able to sing, that he was singing all of these songs live himself, it was very impressive. Then when I saw soon after the Oscars, when Rami Malek won for Bohemian Rhapsody, at the post-Oscar party for Elton John's charity, he and... Elton John and Taron Egerton actually sang this duet of Tiny Dancer. And I mean, I was like, oh my God, these are great. And I loved all these elements. But then I watched this movie as a whole and I just didn't love it. I liked it. I recommend it mostly for watching Taron Egerton's performance. And I like the friendship, that the dynamic with his longtime lyricist, Bernie Taupin. So to see that was giving him his due as the guy who put the words into Elton John's mouth. That was really a good and interesting aspect to this movie, but I don't think it's everyone's cup of tea. I mean, I think some people are going to lean more towards liking that conventional biopic in the vein of a Bohemian Rhapsody versus what I consider Across the Universe and also a little Moulin Rouge-ish in the way that things just kind of burst into song, and sometimes it fits and other times it's a bit of a stretch. But again, didn't love it, but definitely liked it enough to recommend it to anyone who likes Elton John music and just sort of wants to learn more about the guy. The biggest difference for me between watching something like Bohemian Rhapsody and watching this is that Elton John is still very much alive. And so to sort of watch it through the perspective of knowing how his life has shifted in the past 25, 30 years from when the time period that's depicted in this film is quite phenomenal. So that's also interesting, as opposed to when you're watching Bohemian Rhapsody and you're just kind of thinking back to this legend, rock legend who died young, in Freddie Mercury. So I think that's also a big difference.
Unlike Rami Malek in Bohemian Rhapsody, Taron Egerton is singing. He's singing all of it. He's probably even playing the piano, I see. Elton John told him, don't mimic me, don't copycat me. Change the songs to fit you. You make your version of the songs. And he does. The songs are different. Tiny Dancer is different. Yellow Brick Road, and especially Crocodile Rock, are different. And they're not worse, actually. And I've been listening to the soundtrack the last couple days.
His voice is good.
And they're very good. No, they're not the originals. Like, I'm Still Standing is still better, sung by Elton John. By the way, quick aside, if you ever saw that animated film Sing, Taron Egerton voices Johnny the Gorilla, who sings I'm Still Standing in that film. I only put that together afterwards. And it made me smile.
Yeah.
Because my kid made me watch that for like 6 weeks. So yeah, it's Taron singing his own version of these songs. The first quarter of Rocketman is young Elton and his kind of awful, terrible parents, especially his father. His very cold and aloof and isolated and unfeeling and unhugging father. And it's a relief to all of us when he finally splitsvilles the house. And Martini Mom is not necessarily that much better, but she's at least there. And she's played by a very odd casting choice in Bryce Dallas Howard. I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just you're looking at her going, the woman from Jurassic World is in Rocket Man.
Yeah, and is somehow playing Elton John's mother. It was an odd choice.
It felt odd. And the reason why this came to be specifically is, at least from the writer's point, it's written by Lee Hall. Lee Hall wrote Billy Elliot. And when Elton John went to see Billy Elliot and he saw it at the Cannes Film Festival, he burst into tears. He's like, I related to Billy Elliot so much, this working class kid who did not fit in with his family or his peers, this hard blue collar crowd, and especially the relationship with his cloistered, closed off father. So he's, Lee Hall has to write my film. He gets it. He understands where I came from. And so in that perspective, in that lens, it's quite well written. Where I believe it falls off the cliff for both of us, and will for the majority of the audience who don't absolutely love the film, is, and I continue to, this is dogma for me, I continue to come back to this, it is very hard to make an engaging and intriguing addict film. Someone who is addicted to booze and addicted to drugs, it's just so monotonous. I get it. You drink a lot, you fall down a lot, you stumble, you're bleary-eyed. And there's a very long hour of that in this film, and it's so boring.
Well, and you talk about the 6 degrees of movie separation going on here. Billy Elliot was actually played by Jamie Bell, who plays Bernie Taupin in this film. So there's all kinds of interesting cross-pollination that's going on with the filmmakers and with the driving forces behind how this thing was put together. But yeah, the addiction part, you know, really that's how this whole film is framed. It's told through Elton John sort of bursts into rehab. That's how this movie begins. And so everything is sort of a reflection. He's thinking back and going into song and remembering his childhood. And so that's the narrative device that's used to just kind of get you through this entire film, is his days in rehab in some 12-step program. That aspect of it is a little worn and weary, you know, behind the music kind of staple of look what was happening in the 70s with the rock stars and with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And Elton John has made no secret of the fact that, yeah, he lived a very hard R life, which is why he insisted on this being an R-rated movie that includes what Russia has certainly deemed to be unacceptable or uncomfortable gay sex scenes and kissing. And so the filmmakers are going, you can't cut out any of this to make it, you know, PG-13, because this was my life. And I want to put it all out there as to what I was going through. And I think it's also interesting with just seeing how he's really come out the other side. And so it's always kind of comforting to know that, you know, over the past 25, 30 years, he's sobered up. You know, he's married this great guy. They've got a couple of kids. And so it's just nice to actually know that, that as terrible, as hard as it is to just sort of watch what he was going through, that it does actually, unlike a lot of these other films, it actually kind of ends pretty darn well.
Yeah, it's a beat. After a severe trough, it climbs back out of the ditch. I want to talk a little bit about the music. I like that it's not chronological. The family sings I Want Love very early on, and that's I remember learning about that song in like 99. And Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, we actually don't get to till the end, even though we hear bits and pieces of it. Highlights for me were Yellow Brick Road and Rocket Man has a nice central theme. Tiny Dancer was a bummer. I was waiting for that song. It's one of my favorite Elton John songs, and it's almost like a throwaway here. It's All Right for Saturday. Saturday Night is All Right is actually forced. It's a little bit forced because it's a transitioned age. Yeah. But the one that knocked my socks off, the one that I think is actually a perfect scene for the year. There's about ten to a dozen perfect scenes every year, and you usually see them in like film montages. This will be one. Crocodile Rock. Mm-hmm. When Elton John first goes to America, he shows up in Los Angeles, and I suppose was once a famous musical venue called the Troubadour.
Absolutely.
And then he just belts out an interesting, unique version of Crocodile Rock, and I didn't know it was coming. I didn't expect it, and I almost just dropped my pen. I was shy. It was perfect.
It was fun. It was a fun number, and you could just sense the people around you just kind of toe tapping. And
Director Dexter Fletcher did with that, and I don't want to even give it away. Yeah. What he does when you finally get to the la 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 la, what he does to that specific part was a stroke of genius.
Yeah, and I liked in terms of a more emotional pull kind of use of song. When he sings Your Song, which really was the first, you know, when he first put Bernie's lyrics to music and just transformed something, and it was the beginning of something really special. I thought that song was really good. I mean, it was amazing. The more I had to look up how many songs were actually in the soundtrack of the movie, I was like, wow, oh yeah, that one was in there too, and that one was in there too. And then you even realize how many were actually not in there that are also Elton John favorites, you know, like Candle in the Wind. And
yeah,
and
it doesn't even show up as a...
No, some of the more ballady kind of things. So, I mean, from a music perspective, I loved it. I'm wondering, for me personally, I did not love Bohemian Rhapsody the first time I saw it, but when I saw it a second time, I actually liked it more, and it grew on me. I have a feeling at some point, certainly if Taron Egerton gets... kind of remembered come award season, I do feel like this is the kind of movie that I would sort of need to revisit.
Yeah, maybe. I don't see it growing on me just because I'm never going to get past that hour-long slog of nothingness and it being a drain. But the themes are standard, you know, a problem with your parents, never feeling loved even when he's an adult and is in a relationship with John Reed. John Reed also shows up in Bohemian Rhapsody, by the way. It comes off a lot better than that.
John Reed is like total villain in this movie.
Yeah, that was pretty, a big villain, huge.
Yeah.
But overall, a slight thumbs up, but it's because of the tunes and it's because of Taron Egerton.
Absolutely, I agree.
Yeah, outstanding. All right, our next film is also the third wide release from this week. I did not see it. So you went to see Octavia Spencer in something cryptically called Ma.
Yeah, I had to make that really tough choice between a giant green lizard in Godzilla or to see Ma, which is a horror movie, another genre that I don't particularly care for. So I'm not really into monster movies and I'm not really into horror movies. And yet here I was trying to make this choice. But I made this choice because of Octavia Spencer. And it's interesting because you go, wow, Octavia Spencer in what looks like a pretty conventional teen horror flick.
Not really.
She's an Oscar-winning actress. Has always nailed it in her supporting roles in The Help and Hidden Figures.
The Shape of Water.
The Shape of Water. She had that great little role. And so, sure enough, she elevates what is indeed a standard teen horror flick, but somehow watching her have such fun playing a psycho mama is wild. And so she plays this lonely woman named Sue Ann in this little Ohio town, and she befriends this group of teenagers who are out on a beer run trying to get somebody to buy them alcohol. And so she agrees to buy them alcohol, but then says, you know, hey, I've got this giant basement in my house. Why don't y'all come over to my house in a secluded little area, and you can party safely, and that way I know that you're all safe. And I've only got these three rules, you know. It's like you can't curse, you can't go upstairs, and you gotta call me Ma, which is the weirdest of the bunch. And I think there was one other rule that I'm completely blanking on, but she is just deliciously bad and plays it so well that you forgive the fact that this is, by all other accounts, just a regular old horror movie that would have been completely forgettable, that I don't think would have. Right now, I think it's got around a 60% Rotten Tomato, or, you know, it's fresh, 60% fresh. And it's only because of Octavia Spencer. And it's, I mean, it's got a decent supporting cast of adults. They're all fine. The kids are all fine. It's directed by Tate Taylor, who did
The Help. I know that name.
And Winter's Bone.
Yeah.
So, you know, this isn't like some, you know, total slacker director suddenly doing, you know, lowering his standards. He's actually elevating this pretty conventional kind of drama. And it's the kind of... It's for the people who love, like, those Blumhouse horror movies. It's the Halloween kind of thing, and a little bit of Get Out and Us and Split. And so you know what you're in for.
The movie poster reminded me of Us.
Yeah, it reminded me a bit of Us. It's like all of those. It has The Purge. It has elements of all of these kinds of movies. And Allison Janney shows up in this small role as Sue Ann's boss. And Allison Janney kills it in every supporting role she plays. When she pops on the screen, you just can't help but appreciate what you're going to get. And everyone in the audience, this is one of those movies where everybody talks back at the screen. They're like, oh, don't go there, kids. You know, you should know better. Don't go there. Don't do that. And the parents that are not catching on to all the weirdness that's going on, and just the kids being so hormonal that they don't really care. It takes them too long to also sort of clue in to Sue Ann's alternative motives. So, you know, it's it definitely just has you going. It's absurd. It takes some crazy ass turns, and it's just it's for horror fans. If you don't particularly like the genre, you're not necessarily gonna like Ma. But if you are curious to see Octavia Spencer doing her thing in something just so out there, it's worth a watch. I mean, I'd wait and catch it, you know, on a streaming service or renting it later. I don't think you have to run out to the theater to see it. But she is absolutely fun to watch in all her craziness.
I appreciate absurd horror.
Yeah, you might. I think you actually would have kind of liked it. And you would have liked the fact that there are those moments where everybody's just kind of grabbing hold of their neighbor and shouting at the screen. And it was more of just a fun horror outing.
Well, I want to use some of your words to transition into the next film. If you don't like the genre, you will not like this movie. If you don't like absurd romantic comedy with no basis in reality, you will not like Netflix's Always Be My Maybe, a film that Hannah made me watch. The only reason, you know what, it helps and hurts. The only reason anyone's talking about this ridiculous romantic comedy is because of the diverse cast. It's headed by Asian Americans, which is both helped and hurt by its inevitable association with Crazy Rich Asians, a mm-hmm. far superior film, even though I hated that one too. this stars Randall Park and Ali Wong, who both produced it and wrote it. You know Randall Park from Fresh Off the Boat. If you watch that show, it's also directed by that showrunner, Ninochka Khan. Ali Wong used to be a writer on that show. These two grow up together in, looks like they start in Oakland, but then they go to like San Francisco. The geography's a little off here, but yeah, they're in the Bay Area, and they grow up together as kids. And then something happens, and then the big 15 years later, and these, they have just different lifestyles. She... I'm yeah. trying to, like, Sasha. She's, it's like, what's like her name? Sasha. Sasha Tran is a celebrity glitzy
celebrity chef.
And she shows up back in town. She's been gone for like 15 years. And she is somebody. She's opening a restaurant. Marcus didn't go anywhere. He works in his dad's HVAC business. He smokes weed and he's in a funny little quirky band, a little hip hop band, which I kind of enjoyed. I thought it was, they had some good tunes. Will they or won't they? You know what I'm trying to say. If this was in the 90s, it would have been Hugh Grant. Will they or won't they? Will Sasha and Marcus figure it out? I don't care because I didn't believe a word of it. The writing is terrible. The acting is terrible.
Oh,
what a terrible movie.
No, this, okay, can I just tell you? This has a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Why?
Because other than you, even though it is...
the most stock thing ever made.
It is stock except for it has...
Before you say it, do you want to say it?
Yes, but I won't... Yeah. No, so because that is why everybody is talking about this movie. I won't go into what his exact role is, but this movie suddenly shifts from being a very lame Hallmark second chance at
Hallmark,
love
that's
movie,
a good word, yes,
to suddenly being a real movie, at least briefly, because Keanu Reeves shows up. And when Keanu Reeves is on that screen, man, this movie is funny. It is funny. And it's so he, forget the fact that it's led by this Asian American cast and people are comparing it to Crazy Rich Asians, which it's not that as good. But when Keanu Reeves is in it, it is that good. And so that's why people are embracing it. It is your rom. Yes, you need to have some love of the genre. It is the rom-com pick of the week. So yes, you are not going to like the rom-com, but plenty of people out there will. It's perfect for Netflix.
But everybody likes rom-coms. You're really not going to find that person like, I hate rom-coms.
Well, but you're just a sourpuss when
like
it comes
rom-coms.
To... Well,
I do.
But then why are you...
Because this is not a good movie. It's not.
It's not. It's, but it's really funny enough
for
at certain
10
times.
Minutes,
but I'll
it's
that,
funny.
But that 10 minutes... That 10 minutes saves this movie
entirely.
No,
I chuckled.
Entirely.
I didn't guffaw.
Oh, I guffawed. I guffawed over Keanu, because here you've just seen him coming out of John Wick, and he's this guy, the guy from Speed, one of the best action romantic dramas you'd ever see. And so he plays himself, and that's all I'm going to say. But it's, he actually makes this movie way more fun to watch and is, I think, 90% responsible for the 90% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
The movie's 100 minutes long, a little over 100 minutes, and he's on screen for 10% of it, if that. And there is no chemistry between Sasha and Marcus.
Absolutely. I agree.
Zero.
No, I agree.
There's a reason they kind of fight and bicker and they just are going to spend all these 15 years apart. They don't gel. They are different people. And yes, the theme is, well, they both have to meet in the middle and compromise and experience each other's lifestyles. It's in many films have explored that in the past and done it very well. This is not a well-made picture.
No, it's not. It is.
Which is why 90% blows my mind.
It's because it's just
Keanu Reeves is so powerful that he gives this a 90% tomato meter.
It is. He is that powerful, but also it's just a very easy watch. It is nothing great at all. It is formulaic, predictable. Yeah.
It's like when you open the bag of chips and then you look inside and like they're actually below the halfway level. There's nothing in there but air.
Well, there's moments. I remember there being just these enough laugh out loud moments that helped you forgive the lameness of most of what you were watching. So if you would sit there and watch one after another Hallmark romance movies, you are going to be okay sitting there and watching this one on Netflix and then being totally blown away and surprised for 10 minutes with Keanu Reeves. And it absolutely makes this something that that the Netflix-only viewer, the ones who are going to just see what's new on Netflix and wonder and be in the mood for something pretty darn mindless and entertaining.
Mindless is a good word.
But it's mindless entertainment. And when you've got all, you look at all these other things that are out there.
I want you to rank this with, I believe, the most recent rom-com we saw, which has popped Book in my Smart. Head. No, not even Book. That's not a rom-com.
That's not a rom-com, that's but a it gross is better. Out
teen comedy.
But it is a comedy that's better.
You like this film way more than I did. However, even I can say that film is better than Always Be My Maybe. Compare this to Isn't It Romantic, starring Rebel Wilson.
Oh, yeah, no, Rebel Wilson was also just fun. It was just fun for people who
like
the
genre.
But
that actually looked like a motion picture with a director and scenes.
This looks like a...
Not something I can really say for this one.
Well, and you've got... This is like, I think, the first movie, first film directed by this fresh off the boat writer, producer. And so I could feel that. To me, it feels like 90% of it feels like a standard sitcom about these two people who have this falling out and then get reacquainted 15 years later and surprise, surprise, somehow find their way back to each other. Through most of it, it feels like a TV movie. So it doesn't feel
the
same.
Looks like one, too. Then you feel it just straight up looks like one.
So Isn't It Romantic to me was, from beginning to end, I think it was all of like 82 minutes long. And that one was just fun. This one is...
It's not fun.
It's mindless entertainment. Not fun.
I can't believe you are
not
backing
fun.
This so hard.
No,
you're slamming
I'm
not. It while praising it.
I'm not saying that it should be seen
You've
above.
Already agreed that it's not a good movie.
No, I believe that it's a good sitcom-style Hallmark movie.
I want you to insult
injected,
this. It deserves insults.
That's injected with 10 great minutes with Keanu Reeves that makes it... worth watching. I think it made
you
it
you have
worth
to
watching.
Care about and believe the main characters, which we do not.
I don't think you do. I think if you are in the mood for just a simple rom-com that's gonna make you laugh
and there's already
and chuckle,
100 of those on Netflix, go
there
find
are.
Any other one.
But if that's what you already see, and so if Netflix goes, oh, based on everything you
that
watched
is no
in the
compliment
past year,
that is no compliment.
I'm not saying it's a compliment. I'm saying this is only worth seeing for the Keanu Reeves 10 minutes. And it's not worth seeing in a theater because it is out in the theater as well. Ugh. I'm not saying anybody should go out to the theater and see it. I'm just saying if you're sitting at home and you're looking for something just simple that is not, you know, that is flawed for sure, but has just a couple of moments.
All right, how about this? Did you notice the terrible stereotype in the film. So people are like, ooh, it's led by Asian Americans. Great. We don't get a lot of those. And look, there's Asian Americans having a sex scene in bed. Great. We don't get any of those. And then her parents
total stereotype.
We not tip. I not like tip. And I fly here because I had airplane voucher.
No,
and are you serious?
I agree. There was some horrifying stereotyping going on.
You cannot get away with this.
This is. I agree if it was not written and co-starring the same people, they would not get away with it. There would be a tremendous backlash.
Huge.
And then you've got every one of these movies that has like the type A personality woman in it always has the gay assistant. In this, it's a pregnant gay assistant, this woman who actually sets up the re-meet cute between the two main characters. And so it is completely predictable, completely formulaic, absolutely has some horrifying chemistry between the two leads. But
and yet here you
and
are.
Yet I'm not defending it.
Yes,
entirely.
You are. You are defending it.
I'm defending the fact. I'm explaining. No, I'm not defending. I'm trying to explain why it has a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. The same percentage as I believe at least Rocket Man, I think, also has around 90.
I don't
90
think
right
Rocket
now.
Man's that high.
Yeah, no, I think it is at this point.
It's in the
but,
it's great.
It's up there. But it's just... when you try to explain...
So in your world, therefore, Always Be My Maybe is superior to Rocket
no,
Man.
No, not at all. They're completely different for completely different situations when you're in a completely different mood. Rocket Man, I think, deserves to be seen. If you're interested in seeing it, Rocket Man deserves to be seen on the big screen for the bigger bucks. You know, this is a Netflix movie... rom-com all the way.
No, go watch anything else starring Hugh Grant or John Cusack in their early
2000s. Those are always better. I agree. Those are better. Again, I'm just explaining why.
No, you're defending.
This is a 90%
you're actually saying
Rotten
this
Tomatoes.
Is not. You're, this,
no,
you're defending.
It's a. I'm not defending.
All right, we're killing this horse. We're
yes.
beating it to death. But
worse
oh,
than
man.
Godzilla, man.
It's a terrible movie.
And Godzilla actually is getting very split reviews.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
there
got
are
a Rotten
people,
Tomato.
Yes, it's got a Rotten Tomato. But then I saw today that a couple people I know absolutely loved it. I think it's just like the greatest thing. Thought it was the best monster movie ever. Didn't care about the people in that particular movie. But so, hey, it's subjective,
well, the first
man.
One was good.
But it's all totally subjective. So I'm just, if you've got...
Yes, as every movie ever made is subjective.
It is,
you're absolutely
it is.
Right.
But the fact that you didn't appreciate
no.
just how much Keanu Reeves did for that movie
no.
just blows me away.
I chuckled. It was funny to see what he was doing. I saw what he was doing. I appreciated it. I'm like, good on you. No wonder everyone likes you. But no, he cannot save this.
I think
this,
he saved
this
it.
Garbage.
I think he saved it. I think he saved this garbage. I will say that.
Oh, God. All right, tell me about next week.
Okay, so next week we actually, it's 1 week after another now. It's summer, baby. Man, it's like tons of movies coming out. So next week we've got Dark Phoenix, which is that latest X-Men movie.
I get so confused now by, there's been so many X-Men movies. That I'm not going to brush up on this. I don't know where we are in the timeline.
Me either.
I don't know if this is Patrick Stewart or James McAvoy.
I think it has James McAvoy in it, which certainly makes me a little more inclined to go see it. But yes, this is one where I'm not all that familiar with the X-Men chronology at all. But I'll try and go and see it, maybe. Secret Life of Pets is a toss-up. I'm still debating.
No,
I didn't love the first one.
No, I didn't.
But the kids certainly did, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you go take your kid?
It's a night screening.
But then take them later. The Secret Life of Pets 2. I suspect maybe you'll watch the crime thriller called The Fall of the American Empire.
Thinking about it.
So that looks like one of those smart movies that features a bunch of people I've never heard of. But then there's these two entertaining music docs that will be coming out that we can talk about. One is Ron Howard's documentary on Luciano Pavarotti.
Is that how you say it?
Luciano Pavarotti. And a smaller doc called Echo in the Canyon. And that one is about the epicenter of the folk music scene just in this L.A. neighborhood known as Laurel Canyon, you know, the Laurel Canyon neighborhood of L.A.
There's a movie called
in the
Laurel
1960s.
Canyon. That's how I learned about it.
Yeah, and I used to drive over Laurel Canyon to get from West Hollywood to the Valley to work. And so I love driving Laurel Canyon and to see the history of what was happening in the 60s in that sort of cozy little hood was kind of cool. So we'll talk about those two next week. I know you will not have had a chance to see Pavarotti.
Nope.
Directed by Ron Howard.
Yay.
Which is impressive. But hopefully you will enjoy Echo in the Canyon.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I love music documentaries.
Yeah, it's got some good music, so.
All right, quick recap, because, man, we did put a boot in this one. Rocket Man, it's great for Taron Egerton. It's great for new twists on very familiar tunes. It's not great for the way too familiar Addiction story.
I absolutely agree.
Ma.
Ma is great for Octavia Spencer. Take her out of the equation and you have a relatively lame formulaic teenage horror film.
Speaking of lame and formulaic, Always Be My Maybe, which you can watch right now on Netflix, though you should not give them the satisfaction of an extra subscriber view, is terrible.
It's weak, but elevated by Keanu Reeves' appearance. That's all I can say. Keanu Reeves makes this movie watchable.
Well, how much stronger can you get than that? It got a weak butt. All right, well, thank you very much for listening to The Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.